Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, football fans, welcome to another episode of The Call Sheet. Kevin Smith with you. I just got in from driving in my car. I'm gonna see how old school some of our listeners are here today. I was listening to CDs in my car today. CDs, ladies and gentlemen. Some of you youngins, do you know what a CD is? The reason I was listening to CDs was because my Sirius XM membership expired and I forgot to renew it. And that resigned me to listening to the radio, which is awful. And I just got this idea, man. Like I said, hey, I got a CD player in here. Maybe I'll dust off some CDs. And I went up and I had to go all the way up to the attic to find them. They were stored up there, man. But I had a box of about 300 of them in there. So tribute to the 90s today, listening to some Ill Communication by the Beastie Boys and Shake Your Moneymaker by the Black Crowes. That's probably the decade from which my favorite music springs. And so throwback day today to the era of the CD. But today, man, speaking of throwbacks, this is episode 50 of The Call Sheet. And this is the linebacker episode, right? This episode is going to be dedicated totally to linebackers, my favorite position group on the field and a position group that has been increasingly devalued in the NFL. We're going to talk about why that is, you know, what is the reason for the devaluing of the linebacker position, kind of like the running back position on the offensive side of the ball. These are sort of, this is sort of the corresponding group on the defensive side of the ball. And we'll look at, in the second part of the show, you know, while that position is being devalued, it is by no means irrelevant. And there's some really good linebackers coming out in the NFL draft. And we're going to profile a couple of those better linebackers in part two. But to begin, as we always do, a player who wore the number of the episode. And like I said, episode 50, big episode here on the call sheet, man. We're halfway to 100. And I can't think of a better player to profile for episode 50, especially if we're going to talk about linebackers, than Mike Singletary. I mean, the fact that Mike Singletary wore number 50 is probably, you know, a big part of the reason why we're talking about linebackers on the show today. For those of you old enough to remember Mike Singletary, I mean, his resume is stellar. He was a two-time defensive player of the year for the Chicago Bears in the 1980s, a core member of that vaunted 85 Bears defense. I profiled that defense a few weeks back at episode 46 when we talked about the 46 defense, aka the Bear Front, named after the scheme that defense coordinator Buddy Ryan came up with for that Bears team. Singletary was right in the smack in the middle linebacker of that defense. And if there's one thing that guys who are old enough to remember Mike Singletary probably recall about him, it was his eyes. The cameras used to love to zoom in on Mike Singletary, whose eyes, you know, were so wide open. I mean, it looked like he was incapable of blinking. And his pupils would be darting back and forth pre-snap as he tried to take in all the information that he possibly could about an offense before the ball was snapped. I mean, he was the epitome of a downhill backer in the era where a middle linebacker's job, man, was to, you know, clobber fullbacks in the hole, stuff the run. Singletary was one of the best in the game at that. He was a 7-time All-Pro. Like I said, 2-time Defensive Player of the Year, 10 times to the Pro Bowl. I mean, he's certainly remembered as one of the absolute best players of that era, all-decade team of the 1980s. Singletary went on, interestingly, to become a coach in the NFL. He was the head coach of the 49ers back in 2008, 2009, right around there. Not nearly as successful. Made it 2 years before he was fired. When you listen to some of his former players talk, it feels as though Mike Singletary really mastered the motivational aspect of the game, that he was a guy who could get his players to run through a brick wall for him, but not so much with the X and O's. Didn't seem to be a guy that had a great grasp of the X and O element of the game. There, you know, if you look across multiple sports, you often find examples of phenomenal players who just weren't as good as managers or as coaches. I mean, Singletary is a good example in football. You think of Larry Bird in basketball. I mean, his career as a coach certainly didn't pan out. Ted Williams, the legendary baseball player, not very good as a manager. Sometimes those players who were great who become managers expect all their players to be like them, and they really can't handle or can't deal with players who aren't for whatever reason. Singletary, I don't know if that was his issue specifically, but yeah, he got into some spats with some players. He got into some spats with some of his political and social views. He's a very religious guy. As a matter of fact, today, Mike Singletary is an ordained minister. But sometimes those religious views conflicted with some of the views of his team or society at large. So again, man, Mike Singletary, legendary linebacker. Not so much as a coach, but still going to be remembered as one of the all-time greats. And he's an interesting guy to talk about today, because a fascinating question to ask is, would Mike Singletary make it in the NFL today? Would he be Mike Singletary in today's game? I think the answer is probably no. You look at Mike Singletary, 6 foot, 230 pounds, not great straight speed, not great lateral movement or agility, amazing at diagnosing run schemes, getting downhill, filling holes, tackling running backs, etc. But not the kind of guy who, if an offense spread you out, was going to be able to cover tight ends down the field or backs out of the backfield. He's probably a perfect product for his time, but not a transcendent one that would be able to play in any era. And when you talk about that, you really can begin to now get into this broader conversation about why linebackers are being devalued in the NFL. There's been a lot of discussion about that at the running back position, the devaluing of running backs. I mean, that position group continues to be among the most underpaid in the league. They've got 8 running backs currently set to make at least $10 million per season in average annual salary in 2024. And that is the lowest number of players at any position group in the league. There's only 14 running backs set to make at least $5 million next year. But again, compared to many of the other position groups, that pales in comparison. However, the running back market has enjoyed a resurgence in this free agency period. I mean, there was a flurry of activity in the first few weeks in the running back market involving marquee players, Saquon Barkley, Derrick Henry, Austin Eckler, Aaron Jones, Tony Pollard, Josh Jacobs, all those guys move teams. Those are among some of the best running backs in the league. They all move teams. Some of them move teams on fairly, you know, I don't want to say lucrative for the current NFL, but good contracts, considering everybody talking about the running back market being in decline. But on the other side of the ball, there has been no such resurgence at the linebacker position. The average salaries at linebacker remain slightly higher than they do at the running back position, but the growth of those salaries lost to cap inflation is the worst in the league. As of last year, the linebacker position had seen a 27% reduction in salary relative to cap growth since 2014. So really over the past decade, when you figure in cap growth as a whole, the running back market has seen their salaries go down by over a quarter within that time. If we look at salary growth differently, I mean, we can look at the percentage that the average cap hit for each positional group has risen over that same time, 2014 to the present. On defense, it rose highest for interior linemen. It climbed 56%. So again, the average cap hit for interior defensive linemen over the last decade has risen about 56%. Safeties are next with about a 50% cap hit growth. And then you have edge rushers and corners at 43 and 41% respectively. First of all, those numbers are a little bit surprising, right? Because I think everybody sees corners and edge rushers as the marquee positions on defense now. And that is true. They still do have the highest average salaries of defensive players. But in terms of their salary cap growth, they are behind interior defensive linemen and safeties, which is interesting. But of course, bringing up the rear are the inside backers. The inside linebackers have just a 29% growth rate since 2014. Here's another metric which underscores how linebackers are being devalued. Between 2015 and 2020, 14 linebackers were selected in the first round of the NFL draft. All of those players have now reached the point where they become eligible to have the fifth-year option picked up on their rookie deal. And of those 14, 11, or roughly 80%, had their fifth-year options either declined or those players were actually cut or waived before the team even needed to make a decision on a fifth year. So that means these players were either not performing well enough to merit picking up the option, or the team determined that the salary they'd receive under the fifth-year option formula was simply not worth it. Why? Because the linebacker position doesn't carry the importance with it that it used to. I mean, given this trend, it's easy to see why linebackers are being pushed down draft boards. Between 2006 and 2014, right? You go back. Let's go back now almost 20 years. Between 2006 and 2014, that's a nine-year period, there were 48 inside linebackers taken in the first round of the NFL draft. 48 over that nine-year period. So a little more than five a year. But the next 9 years, 2015 to 2023, last year's draft, there were just 28 taken. That's just over three per draft. That's a significant fall off of linebackers being taken in the first round. I mean, there's thousands of mock drafts out there covering this year's draft. And if you go through them, I mean, you could just start shuffling through. Only one inside backer, North Carolina State's Peyton Wilson, shows up regularly as a first rounder. I mean, Peyton Wilson is really like the only name that you see consistently in those mocks. And he's not even included in all of them. A lot of those mocks, or at least some of those mocks, I should say, have him as a second round guy. So it's possible, if Wilson falls, that we will see no inside linebackers taken in the first round of the 2024 draft. That's fascinating to me. It's fair to say, then, if we look at salaries as a guide or as drafting as a guide, that the linebacker position is being devalued at a rate even greater than the running back position. Which brings us to this question. Well, why? Why is that, right? Why are linebackers being phased out of the game, so to speak? And, you know, I think the most common reason, there's probably two factors, and they go hand in hand. The most common reason is the changing nature of offenses. I mean, quite simply, the game is just being played more horizontally now. Offenses sort of set that stage when they began ditching their fullbacks and their second tight end and going 11 personnel. And integrating stretch concepts into every scheme. I mean, these stretch concepts, they're now all the rage in offensive football. The wide zone, the bubble and rocket screens, the Y cross route, the mesh concept. Every modern passing game has those. Offenses are now aiming to force defenses to defend the 53-yard width of the field as much as they're asking them to defend the 100-yard length. And so expanding defenses now and creating seams that an offense can exploit, or in other words, creating space and then getting quick offensive players into that space. That's to offensive football in the 2020s what, you know, getting an extra hat in the form of a fullback was at the point of attack in the 1970s. I mean, football, don't get me wrong, football is still a game of vertical displacement. It's still a game where you want to control the line of scrimmage by having your big guys dominate the other team's big guys. But it's no longer only a game of vertical displacement. Man, that was the football that probably a lot of you listening grew up on, the football I grew up on, vertical displacement, man. Last week I talked about my experience as a college football player being a box safety in the 1990s when everybody was running power and fullback. And I mean, I was just a glorified linebacker because, you know, you had to stop the run. Well, football looks a whole lot different today, obviously. It is no longer only a game of vertical displacement. And because of this, the emphasis on attacking defenses horizontally have forced defenses to change. And the one big lesson they've learned is this: you better be able to run. You got to be able to run to the ball, because if you can't run to the ball, you're in trouble. And that gets us to reason number two, why linebackers have been devalued. And it's this: because defenses, they just have to be faster sideline to sideline now. They play a lot less base defense. They're increasingly relying on sub packages. That means nickel and dime looks with 5 and 6 defensive backs, aka guys who can run. Now, the emphasis on traditional 3-4 and 4-3 defensive structures is diminishing because speed is now as necessary as brawn. And in particular, this means that the downhill, two-gap, run-stuffing linebacker who once roamed the planet for the exclusive purpose of smashing into fullbacks and destroying gap runs, you know, aka Mike Singletary, that player is becoming an endangered species. There's still a place in the game for that player. Don't get me wrong. There is. But his place is rarely an every down role now like it once was. I mean, the slot corner and the box safety, those positions are the fancy new sports cars that everybody wants to drive. And the three down backer is your grandfather's station wagon. So last question before we go to break, right? Are these changes permanent? Is this something that, you know, you'll just like the inside backer is going to go the way of the dinosaur and never really come back, the three down backer? I doubt it. Because football is in constant flux. It's a constant chess match. The offensive coordinators led a revolution about a decade ago where they ditched the fullbacks and the second tight ends and they started spreading the field with the receivers. And the defensive coordinators have since countered with the aforementioned 5 nickel, you know, and dime packages. And that counter move, man, the heavy reliance on sub-package defenses has actually led to a downtick in scoring the last 2 years. So despite this host of rules, rule changes that make it more and more difficult to play defense, scoring's been down over the last 2 years. It feels like the defense coordinators are catching up. And now the defenses have stocked their rosters with these speedier slot corners and box safeties. Might we see the offenses move back towards bigger personnel? Will that next be the next move? Some teams are already there. Now, Arthur Smith, Pittsburgh's new offensive coordinator, he's going to base out of 12 personnel and load up on tight ends. The Patriots, they've been doing this now for the past few seasons. So have the Eagles and the 49ers and the Titans. There are already teams that are moving more towards bigger personnel, maybe getting out of that heavy reliance on 11 personnel and leaning into the 12, the 21, even the 13 formations. So if offenses return to their roots, we may see the value of linebackers rise again. But for now, they remain the running backs of the defense, an old commodity in a changing marketplace for whom a decrease in demand has created an inevitable decrease in value. Okay, the inside backer, man. As somebody who grew up as a little kid, idolizing Jack Lambert, as somebody who, when I got older, my favorite player in the NFL was Chris Spielman, as somebody who's here to do a tribute to Mike Singletary, this all makes me sad. It makes me sad. But I hold out hope, man. I actually love the evolution of the game, and I hold out hope that the great three-down linebacker will one day become a thing again. All right, so are there some of those guys in the draft? Let's take a look, man. We're going to take a break. And on the other side, let's talk about some of the potentially great inside linebackers that could be awaiting the NFL in the upcoming 2024 draft. Come on back, everybody. Welcome back to The Call Show, Kevin Smith. The Call Show, The Call Sheet. It's The Call Sheet Show. And Kevin Smith with you. And we're talking linebackers. We're talking linebackers from start to finish on today's show, episode number 50, partially a tribute to the great linebacker Mike Singletary, partially to the intriguing question as to why the value of the linebacker has been dropping, much like the running back position in the NFL. And now in this part of the show, we're gonna look ahead because while the value may be dropping, there are some pretty good linebackers available in the upcoming NFL draft. It's not supposed to be a real deep draft for backers, and it's not supposed to have a lot of high-end talent. That's why, like in the first part of the show, I talked about how you may only see one linebacker drafted in the first round. You may see none. But that said, there are some nice players to be had, and we're going to profile some of them right now. So let's start with the guy who is probably the most likely to be taken in the first round, if there is a first round pick in this draft, and that's Peyton Wilson, the linebacker out of North Carolina State. He just blew people away at the combine, and that's why it feels as though, I don't want to say he's a lock to be a first round pick, but it feels as though the odds are certainly much better than not that he'll go in that first round. So Wilson measured in at almost 6'4", 6'3", and 7'8", 233 pounds, so roughly 6'4", 233. And he blew people away by running a 4.43 40-yard dash, which in the history of the combine, of all the linebackers relative to his size that have run the 40-yard dash, stands in the 99.5 percentile. Meaning he's been faster than just about every linebacker to ever run the 40 at the combine who's a comparable size. He's a fifth-year player. He's 23 years old. Now, the experience works, I think, to his advantage, but the fact that he is 23 may be seen as a bit of a disadvantage. Maybe he's a little bit older than some teams would like him to be at linebacker. But he's been a tackling machine the last 2 years, over 250 combined tackles the last two seasons. Graded out in the 90th percentile in both tackling or run defense and coverage, which is a big advantage, which suggests that he can stay on the field on third downs. He's reminiscent of Jack Campbell, who went to the Lions in the first round last year out of Iowa, but with better lateral mobility and better straight end speed. And that's why, you know, teams are really high on Wilson. So a couple of red flags. I mentioned his age. The biggest thing may be injury history. He's had two ACL injuries. He's had a shoulder injury. So obviously a guy who's a little bit older and has some injury history may give a few teams pause. But when you look at the back end of the first round, there are a couple of teams that could really use a dude in the middle. And I think that conversation starts with the Dallas Cowboys at number 24. Leighton Vander Esch's retirement has certainly increased their need for an inside linebacker. And you look at Wilson. Wilson is like a more athletic version of Vander Esch. I mean, Dallas got so thin at linebacker last year that they bumped safety Marquise Bell into their linebacker rotation. I coached against Marquise Bell when he was a 160-pound sophomore at Bridgeton High School here in southern New Jersey. I can't imagine Marquise Bell playing linebacker in the NFL, which isn't to say that he's not talented. He's super talented. He was a scary kid in high school. Tall, man, but he's a big dude, size-wise. Marquise Bell, 6'2", but he was 160 pounds in high school, a string bean. He could hit. He could always hit, and he could run, and he was a great high school football player. But the idea of him transitioning into an NFL linebacker, inside backer, seemed, you know, kind of far-fetched at the time. So he, you know, I think Bell would be better suited to go back to his natural safety position, and you could slide a guy like Wilson in there to the Cowboys. So again, the Cowboys pick at number 24. Maybe that might seem a little high for Wilson. I think ideally, if you're Dallas, you'd like to be able to grab him a little further down the draft board. But the Packers pick right behind you at 25, and Green Bay also has a need for linebacker. So if the Cowboys really want to fill that void, then they'd be wise to snap up Wilson at number 24. Another interesting prospect at inside backer could be Texas A&M's Edgerrin Cooper, who was the second fastest inside linebacker just behind Wilson at the combine. He clocked in at 4.52 in the 40. He was excellent in the broad jump, in the vertical jump. I mean, he demonstrated tremendous explosiveness. He looks like a modern NFL linebacker. He's 6'2", 230, chiseled, man, put together. But remarkably lean, you know, for carrying 230 pounds on that 6'2" frame. He doesn't look top heavy. He doesn't look like a Mike Singletary, who was also about 230. You know, he's taller and leaner than Singletary was. And he's built to play the modern NFL game. He's got good coverage skills. He can run sideline to sideline. He can get after the quarterback. I mean, he's really kind of like a triple threat at linebacker. Good playing the run, good in coverage, good getting after the passer. And you think, you know, hey, who might be a team that could use his skills? Just about any NFL team could use his skills, but realistically in this draft, and you kind of circle the Las Vegas Raiders. I mean, the Raiders are a team with a need at linebacker. You look at like what they've done in free agency, going out and signing Christian Wilkins to really solidify the defensive line. You put Christian Wilkins with Max Crosby, they're going to be able to get after the passer, Vegas. And now you add a blitzer in like Cooper, right? Or a guy who can hold up in coverage against tight ends like Cooper, maybe take away hot checks from quarterbacks or check downs. Maybe you get a great pass rush from Crosby and or Wilkins, and you force QBs to go to their hots. They dump the ball off. And now you got a guy like Cooper, who's a really good open field tackler, running sideline to sideline, dragging those guys down for short gains. Makes a lot of sense. The Raiders are picking at number 44 overall, and that puts them fairly early in round two, and that could be a really good spot to see Cooper go off the board. A third linebacker that we should really keep our eye on, Clemson's Jeremiah Trotter Jr., son of the Axeman, Jeremiah Trotter Sr., living in and near the Philadelphia area. I can tell you that Jeremiah Trotter Sr. is an absolute favorite of Eagles fans. They love Jeremiah Trotter Sr. And they would love to see his son land in Philly. And it would be a great match. I mean, Jeremiah Trotter Jr., who is built like a Mike Singletary, 6'0", 230, pretty much about the same size, a little thicker build than the other two backers we were just talking about. Great instincts, man. A guy who really, really like sees the game well. Not the athlete that a Peyton Wilson is, but a guy who really can get downhill in the run game. He might be a two-down backer in the NFL, but he could be a really good one. Again, excellent instincts, can really diagnose runs, can fit seams, can find gaps. You know, he's just got a nose for the ball. You hear coaches talk about with linebackers about whether or not they can see gaps that are cloudy or clear. I mean, he's got a really great understanding of that concept of being able to find clear gaps and get through them or scrape over the top of cloudy gaps to get to the football. Trotter would be a great fit in Philadelphia. I mean, we were you know, obviously talking about the devaluing of the linebacker position. I think the Eagles are like the poster child for that mentality. Philadelphia has really not been willing to spend money or draft picks on high-rated linebackers. As a matter of fact, this is actually hard to believe. The last time the Eagles had a first-team All-Pro linebacker was in 2000, and it was Jeremiah Trotter Sr. The Eagles have not had an All-Pro linebacker since Jeremiah Trotter Jr.'s father was playing in Philly in 2000. Just gives you an idea about how that position has really not been one of importance for Philly, but it's really caught up to them. The Eagles struggled to stop the run last season. They had a patchwork crew of linebackers. And so investing in a stud at the position would be a big deal for Philly. And they pick at number 50 in this draft, middle of the second round. And that would be a great spot for them to bring the hometown boy, man, Jeremiah Trotter Jr., who played his high school football at St. Joe's Prep in Philly, back to the city. All right, let's look at one more guy. Let's look at maybe a guy who could be a boom or bust guy, a little bit of a sleeper perhaps, right, where these first three backers were profiling. I think all three of those guys are going to be excellent, excellent NFL players. But who's the guy that, you know, you might want to take a chance on? A guy who, if you get him into the right system, he could excel. Or maybe if he falls to the wrong one, he's a guy that'll wash out of the league. And I think an intriguing name from that perspective is North Carolina linebacker Cedric Gray, 6'2", about 237 pounds. Doesn't quite have the speed of a Wilson. He clocked in at 4.64 in the 40 during the combine. But when you put on the tape, one thing that leaps out, playmaker. Absolute playmaker. In the last 2 years as a starter at North Carolina, 262 tackles, 18 tackles for loss, 5 interceptions, 8 pass breakups. 5 interceptions and 8 pass breakups from the inside linebacker position is really impressive. And he is a guy who flies around the field. Now, that flying around the field can get him in trouble. He's also a guy who misses a lot of tackles, who can run himself out of gaps, right? You can over-pursue plays. He's going to make some mistakes. So that's why scheme fit's really important, and that's why coaching is really important. You think, hey, man, this is a guy that if he is taught how to manage his enthusiasm on the football field, if he's taught to be a disciplined backside player, he probably fits in a 3-4 defense as like your Mac linebacker, which is oftentimes the backside backer, not your downhill banger, right? But your guy who's allowed to kind of flow sideline to sideline. You get him in the right scheme with the right coaching staff, and boy, his production in college suggests that he could be a steal in the third, maybe even in the fourth round if he falls, right? Maybe some teams will be scared off by the combine numbers, which weren't exceptional. He's a great study in where do you put your stock, in the tape or in the workouts? You know, I think most teams, it's probably a combination of the two. But when you look at the tape, this guy can really he can wow you. So where could be a good landing spot for Cedric Gray? I really like Seattle for him. They've got a need at linebacker. You've got a new head coach there, Mike McDonald, who loved his linebackers in Baltimore, man. He had some good ones. He's not a guy who is decreasing or diminishing the value of linebackers in his scheme. He wants linebackers in his scheme. You look at where Seattle's picking. They're picking in the middle of round 3. That might be a spot. And if Gray falls, Seattle's got Washington's pick in round 4, which comes as the second pick in the round. So if he slips out of the third round, the Seahawks could nab him right at the beginning of round 4. All right, so those are some of, I think, the more intriguing linebacker prospects in the upcoming draft. Some of these guys, I think, are hits. Guys like Wilson and Trotter, I think, man, they're hits. Guys like Gray are going to be really intriguing pieces, man, and who could wash out of the league, right, or could, hey, wind up as Pro Bowlers. You just don't know. Either way, man, let's give some love to the linebackers. The position group whose value seems to be falling fastest in the NFL, to me, is still encompasses the spirit of the game. Man, what is football all about? It's about blocking, tackling, running to the ball, tough men who are unafraid to stick their nose, to bloody their nose in there, man. Really, really to get after it. To embrace the contact and for the love of the game. And linebackers play for the love of the game. I really believe that the linebacker position, to me, epitomizes what football should be about. Is it still about those things? Maybe to a degree, not as much as it used to be. Who knows? It'll come back around one day. The linebacker, I think, will be king at some point in the NFL's future. All right, that is episode 50 of The Call Sheet. Hope everybody has a great holiday, man, if you're doing something for Easter or for a spring break, something like that. Please be safe as you travel. I'm going to be doing some traveling myself. So I will catch you again on the other side. It's Kevin Smith for the call sheet. Take care, everybody.